Penguin Random House Audio presents Wild Country, The World of the Others, by Anne Bishop. Read for you by Alexandra Harris. For Janet Chase and Jana Panacea. Author's note about the story's timeline. If you've listened to Etched in Bone, some of the events in Wild Country will be familiar to you. That's because the timeline of the two stories is intertwined and takes place shortly after the war between humans and the Terra Indigene. A year from now, it would be called the Great Predation. Those terrifying days when the Elementals and the Elders, the Terra Indigene who are Namid's teeth and claws, came out of the Wild Country and brutally thinned the human herds in Thasia. In some cases, they wiped out the entire population of human towns in the Northwest and Midwest in retaliation for the slaughter of the Wolf Guard and other forms of shifters who had kept watch over the human places. Now, with death still fresh in everyone's minds, Terra Indigene and humans alike want to claim those empty places, especially the places of strategic importance. Bennett is one of those places. And the Elders are staying nearby, waiting for the humans to make another mistake. Waiting for them to make the last mistake. Chapter 1. Wednesday, Summer 25. Jana Panacea followed the gravel paths through the Memorial Park. There were no cemeteries on the continent of Thasia. No individual gravestones. No family mausoleums unless you were very rich. Cities couldn't afford to waste land on the dead when the living needed every acre that they were grudgingly permitted to lease from the Terra Indigene who ruled the continent, who ruled the world. They had smashed and torn that harsh truth into humans around the world, and only fools or the blindly optimistic thought there was any chance of things going back to the way they had been before the humans' first and last movement had started the war against the Terra Indigene here in Thasia and in Kel Romano on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. Instead of gaining anything from the war, humans had lost ground, literally. Cities had been destroyed or were no longer under human control. People were running to any place they thought could provide safety, thinking that the larger cities were less vulnerable to what the others could do. In that, too, humans were wrong. The destruction of so much of Toland, a large human-controlled city on the East Coast, should have taught people that much. But this wasn't a day to think about those things. Jana found the large flower bed with the tall granite marker in the center. There were no graveyards, no gravestones in Thasia. But there were memorial parks full of flower beds and small ponds, with benches positioned so the living could visit with the dead. She looked down the double column of names carved into the granite until she found the two she'd come to see. Martha Chase. Wilbur Chase. The foster parents who had taken her from the foundling home and raised her as their own. There hadn't been even a birth certificate left with her when the Universal Temple priests had found her on the temple doorstep. Just a printed note with her name and birth date. All bodies were cremated, and the ashes mixed with the soil in these flower beds. The names carved on the granite, the only acknowledgement of who was there. Martha had loved growing flowers, and Pops had always tended a small vegetable garden in their backyard. Jana was the one who had no skill with the soil, no matter how hard she tried. She knew a rose from a daisy, understood the difference between annual and perennial, and most of the time had dug up weeds instead of flowers when she tried to help Martha tidy the beds.
You have other talents, Pops used to say with a laugh.
Other talents? Gods, she hoped so. They had died in a car accident just a week after she'd been accepted into the police academy, one of only three women to be accepted. She'd spent the first few months struggling with her classwork and the hostility of her classmates while traveling from Hubney to a village near the Adirondack Mountains to meet with the Chase's attorney and take care of her foster parents' estate. There wasn't much. Martha and Pops had never been interested in things,
but the sale of the house and furnishings was enough to pay off the school loans she'd taken out to attend a community college while she tried to get accepted into the police academy. It was enough to pay for the academy and living expenses. She'd been frugal, but if she didn't get a job soon... "Hey, Martha," Jana said softly, after looking around to make sure she was alone. "Hey, Pops." She sat on the bench, her hands folded in her lap. "I graduated from the academy. The only woman who stuck it out. Martha, you always said I was stubborn, and I guess you were right. I have a meeting with the academy administrator next week. Hopefully it will be about a job offer. The gods know. Every human community needs cops right now, and everyone else in my class has already been hired by towns in the Northeast region, which lost officers last month because of the war. But I know there are positions that haven't been filled yet because no one wants to take a job in a village stuck in the middle of the wild country. They say that's just delayed suicide. Maybe they're right, but I'd take that chance." She looked at the flowers growing in the bed and wished she could remember the names of some of them. "I came to say goodbye. It's getting harder and harder to purchase a bus ticket, and I'm not sure I'll be able to get back here again. And if I'm hired, when I'm hired, I may be leaving in a hurry." She paused. "Thanks for everything. When I get to wherever I'm going, I'll light a candle in remembrance." Jana hurried through the park, gauging that she had just enough time to reach the bus stop near the park gates and catch the bus back to Hubney. She hoped that by this time next week, she'd be heading to another town to do the only job she'd ever wanted to do. Chapter 2. Wednesday, summer 25.
"I quit!"
Tolia Sanguinati studied Jesse Walker as they faced each other over the counter in Bennett's general store. The look in her eyes made him think of the lightning that sometimes filled the sky in this part of Thasia. Despite being a dangerous predator, far more dangerous than the humans here appreciated, that look made him wary.
"You can't quit."
"Oh, yes, I can."
He took a step back and considered. It was tempting to point out that, since she didn't actually work for him, she couldn't technically quit. But Jesse Walker was the unofficial leader of Prairie Gold, a small Intuit town located at the southern end of the Elder Hills. As such, she was his most important human ally. He couldn't afford to lose her knowledge or cooperation, so it probably wasn't a good idea to point out anything. Erebus Sanguinati, the leader of all the Sanguinati on the continent of Thasia, had told him to take over Bennett after all the humans had been slaughtered by Namid's teeth and claws. The town had a train station that serviced all the ranches in the area, as well as Prairie Gold. That made it an important place that the elders would no longer allow humans to control, because, under human control, the trains that traveled back and forth across the land had brought enemies to this part of Thasia, had brought death to the Wolf Guard and other shifters. Every place inhabited by humans was in turmoil right now, because no one knew how many of those places had survived. With quick communication between regions severed by the elders destroying the telephone lines and tearing down the mobile phone towers all along the regional boundaries, email and phones of any kind were useful only within a region. But even within a region, no one really knew whether a phone went unanswered because someone wasn't in the office at that moment, or because there was no one left in that town to answer it. But the rest of the Midwest region wasn't his problem. Right now, his problem was the slim, middle-aged, gray-haired woman who had been helping him prioritize the tasks necessary to keep the train station open and to deal with urgent things like spoiling food and pets that had been left in residences. Until he traveled to Prairie Gold to be Grandfather Erebus's eyes and ears, Tolia had lived his whole life in Toland, one of the largest cities on the entire continent. He'd had the most extensive human-centric education available to the Terra Indigene, and had been among the Sanguinati who monitored the television newscasts and the newspapers, as a way of keeping an eye on what the duplicitous humans might be planning.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?